Thank you for the introduction, and I want to thank the organizers for inviting me to give this talk here. And well, I'm very glad that some people brought lunch, because there's nothing worse than to speak to hungry people. Okay, so it's about non-equilibrium dynamics of interacting tunneling states in glasses at ultra-low temperatures. And the work was done in Doug Oshorov's group at Stanford University. Most measurements done on glasses at temperatures below 1 Kelvin so far are presumably done in thermal equilibrium. And most of these measurements are very well described by the phenomenological tunneling model, which neglects interactions between tunneling states. However, more recent experiments clearly indicate that mutual interactions between tunneling states do exist in glasses. And I have the feeling whenever you look close enough to your experiments, you find deviations from the tunneling model. And the common belief in our days is that most of these deviations are due to interactions between tunneling states. One example is in the group of Siegfried Hunklinger and Heidelberg, they measured the internal friction and sound velocity of a quartz glass sample in dependence of the frequency below 100 millikelvin down to 10 millikelvin, 6 millikelvin. And the frequency dependence they measured cannot be explained by the tunneling model. And they say it's due to interactions. This becomes, that interactions between tunneling states matter, really becomes clear in non-equilibrium measurements, how they were done in Doug Oshorov's group since something like 8 years. And they revealed that the linear response can be acoustic or electric in equilibrium is decreased. So if you sweep a bias field, you will find a gap in thermal equilibrium. And Alexander Burin was the one who explained these findings by strongly coupled pairs of tunneling states. In a similar matter as for the Coulomb gap in electronic systems or the gap at the metric states in, for spin glasses, it's the same, basically. In our new experiments, we focus on looking closely at the dynamics of these coupled tunneling states. And what we find is somewhat surprising, because you expect that the dynamics is mainly due to energy relaxation of tunneling states. Then it should depend on the strength of the applied bias field and on how long a bias field is applied. However, we find that the dynamics strongly depends on the sweep rate of an external field, in general, how fast you switch a bias field off or on. And we explain this by presuming that the adiabatic approximation of tunneling system fails, so by non-adiabatic driving of tunneling states by the external field. And when we do that and fit our data, we then find that it's still not enough to explain our data. We need to assume a third process next to energy relaxation and non-adiabatic driving. And this is probably, has probably to do with structural rearrangement of tunneling states. Well, far away from the tunneling predictions of the tunneling model. So I will go into these points in detail. And we also find a direct proof for interactions between tunneling states, an additional proof by looking at the relaxation rates of tunneling states in glasses, which are too fast for one phonon relaxation. And the temperature dependence also indicates that mutual interactions between tunneling states open up an extra relaxational channel in the millikelvin range. But let us start where the story began. And this was in 1971, when Bobby Pohl and his graduate student Seller performed the first thermal experiment reported on glasses below 1 Kelvin. And they measured the thermal conductivity of quartz glass versus the thermal conductivity of a quartz crystal. The glass is blue and the crystal is red. And it's plotted here in a double logarithmic plot. And what they find is that the thermal conductivity is decreased a lot compared to the thermal conductivity in a crystal. And it's not proportional to T cubed, like expected by Debye's law and so on, and but it's proportional to T squared. And soon after this, the specific heat was measured in quartz glass, what we expect for a crystal, and what was also measured for a quartz crystal. I apologize that I don't have data points in this plot. For the crystal is Debye's T cubed law. What these people found was that the specific heat is vastly elevated and is more proportional to temperature than to temperature cubed. Clearly, this elevated specific heat indicates that there exist additional low energy states which are still available at these low temperatures, well below 1 Kelvin. And the linear behavior points in the direction of a broad distribution of low energy states.
This is only below 1 Kelvin. Above 1 Kelvin is about the same.
Yeah, the curves meet somewhere at higher temperatures for the crystal and the glass for the specific heat. And the small, the decreased thermal conductivity indicates that these low energy states are localized defects that are strongly coupled to phonons, so they can scatter the phonons in the material. And because these temperatures are so low, the classical system would be frozen at these temperatures. So we expect that it's quantum mechanical tunneling which makes additional movements in these materials. And so we call these low energy states tunneling states or tunneling systems. And this is a very hand-waving picture how one can imagine the microscopic structure of these tunneling states. The reality is we don't really know the microscopic structure of tunneling states even after 30 years of research so far. But this is a two-dimensional projection of maybe SiO2 class. And some of the atoms, because of the structure disorder, don't know where they would like to be, meaning that they have two lowest energy wells in the potential landscape, which are accessible thermally. And then they tunnel in between these two wells. And that makes a tunneling state. However, it's most probably it's not just one atom per tunneling state, but several atoms make a tunneling state, which tunnel coherently. It could be any number between, say, 10 or 100 atoms per tunneling states. And soon after these first experiments, two groups came up independently from each other with the tunneling model to describe these experiments. One group was just Phillips, and the other one was Anderson and co-workers. That's the Anderson who also found the Anderson localization. And they describe these low energy states by phenomenologically by a double well potential, and the in each single well only the ground state is thermally accessible, so we have a two-state system. And they also allow an asymmetry energy delta of the single wells, and now the system tunnels between these two wells, and therefore we have the tunneling splitting delta naught, which can be approximated by the WKB method. And the energy splitting between the energy eigenstates, which is the symmetric ground state and the anti-symmetric excited states, of course, can be easily calculated for this two-level system, and it turns out to be the square root of the squares of the sum of the squares of the tunneling splitting and the asymmetry energy of this system. And in order to describe the experiments I just showed you on the last slide, the tunneling model assumes a broad distribution, actually a flat distribution of the tunneling parameter lambda. E to minus lambda is a tunneling probability, and lambda, of course, contains the effective mass and the geometry of the potential, and the asymmetry energy delta. And this flat distribution, if you integrate over it, you get the density of states, which is almost flat besides of logarithmic corrections, which are usually ignored. And you have to introduce a delta not min technically in order to integrate over this, in order to be able to integrate over this distribution. Very important is that the tunneling model neglects any interaction between tunneling states, because this talk is about interactions between tunneling states. So it goes beyond the tunneling model. However, the tunneling model was very, very successful to describe almost all experiments at low temperature so far during the last 30 years. It's only since about 5 years that we are able to look closely enough to find deviations from the tunneling model. And maybe I should also emphasize that this general model is very suitable to describe the universality that we observe in classes at low temperatures and at high temperatures, qualitatively and quantitatively. And but of course, it doesn't give us a tool to study the microscopic origin of tunneling states because it's phenomenological. And let us now go to non-equilibrium measurements. This was, I think, about the first measurement where so Salvino was a graduate student of Doug Oshorov. In 94, he did this experiment. He prepared the sample, which is slightly modified quartz glass. It doesn't really matter what kind of sample we look at. All glasses show this kind of behavior that people ever looked at. So he prepared his glass sample in thermal equilibrium at zero bias field, and then he suddenly applied an electric bias field, in this case of 10 megavolts per meter on the sample, while he measured the AC dielectric constant at a kilohertz in the linear response region. And this measurement was done at 50 millikelvin. So when he suddenly applies the bias field and leaves it on for the remainder of the experiment, he sees that the dielectric constant jumps up to a somewhat higher value, and about 10 to minus 3, the relative dielectric constant, and then it decays very slowly back into thermal equilibrium, and it ends up at the same value where it started, where we started. So clearly, we prepared a non-equilibrium state, and this is a relaxation. But it's stunning that it's the relaxation times are so long. After 20 hours, the sample is still not in thermal equilibrium.
Do you know how this curve depends on frequency and time? Is it just function of time and frequency, for example?
Well, there is a frequency dependence at it depends on temperature what the frequency dependence is. So, and I must be careful that I don't say anything wrong. At temperatures above where the minimum of the dielectric constant appears, there is a pronounced frequency dependence due to the frequency dependence of the relaxation rates. Below that minimum, the temperature of the minimum of the dielectric constant, the contributing systems are only the resonant part of the dielectric constant contributes to the experiment, and there shouldn't be a frequency dependence. But I believe that there exist experiments that show a frequency dependence nevertheless.
And you don't remember if it's just f times t or not?
The frequency dependence is certainly logarithmic, if there is one. That's a phenomenon that almost all dependencies are logarithmic on these experiments. okay, anyway, so how do we understand this? it's important to notice that the relevant Tunning states that contribute to the dielectric, the relative change of the dielectric constants, are always the thermal ones. And I will come back to this later on. So E is about kT. E was the energy splitting of the Tunning states. And the bias fields that are applied cause P times F, P is the dipole moment, to be much greater than kT and the thermal energy. However, the bias field couples directly to the asymmetry energy via the dipole moment, and therefore the energy splitting depends on the bias field. And if P times F is much greater than kT, the tunneling systems that contributed initially to the dielectric constant are not the same that contribute at the applied bias field. So we have a different set of tunneling states that contribute to the experiment. So if we start with a tunneling state which has E about kT and is about symmetric, it contributes to the measurement, and we apply P times F. Now it's very asymmetric. The energy splitting is actually about P times F, and it's dead. It doesn't contribute. However, because the contribution of asymmetry energies is flat within the tunneling model, we expect that there is another tunneling state which is very asymmetric and which now contributes to the dielectric constant. And the number of tunneling states that contribute to the dielectric constant should be independent of the bias field. And therefore, we find ourselves, when the sample is relaxed completely, at the same value of the dielectric constant as where we started. And in between, we have a non-equilibrium state. If you calculate the relaxation rates for the thermal tunneling states, which E about kT, that contribute to the dielectric constant, you find actually that there should be, the rates should be much shorter than what we expect here. So that's a mystery at this point, that the relaxation rates are so long. Then the same guys did another experiment. They again prepared the sample in thermal equilibrium at zero bias field, and swept the bias field relatively fast through the zero field region. And what they found is a decreased dielectric constant in thermal equilibrium at zero bias field. And when they now applied a bias field at, let's say, 5 megawatts per meter for a long time, and brought the sample into thermal equilibrium at 5 megawatts per meter, this structure would shift to 5 megawatts per meter. So it's really a decreased dielectric constant or decreased linear response in thermal equilibrium. And that can be explained, it was explained by Alexander Burin and by his dipole gap theory, where he assumes that strongly coupled pairs of tunneling states do not contribute to the dielectric constant in thermal equilibrium because it dipole moments are fixed relative to each other by the interaction energy. But if you apply a strong bias field, you bring all tunneling states, including the strongly coupled pairs, out of equilibrium, and then they cannot be considered as being strongly coupled anymore because additional energy states are available and they're out of equilibrium, and they contribute to the dielectric constant like isolated tunneling states, and therefore they dielectric constant increases if you move out of thermal equilibrium. The argumentation is essentially the same as for the Coulomb gap or the gap in spin classes at symmetric systems. So now let us have a look at what kind of strongly coupled pairs are really important for our experiment. So the relevant ones have E about kT, and now we can see why this is the case, because in order to contribute to the relative change of the dielectric constant, well, the relative change of the dielectric constant is proportional to this function here. So E has to be larger than kT in order for the hyperbolic tangents not to disappear. On the other hand, because of this prefactor, E must be not too large. So generally, E about kT are the tunneling systems that can contribute. But then, because of the prefactor, delta naught squared over E cubed, delta naught should be relatively large for the systems to contribute. In other words, delta naught is a tunneling splitting. It cannot be greater than the energy splitting. So in other words, the system should be more or less symmetric, so we can see them. Data naught is about kT. Now, but we have very long relaxation times, and the relaxation times are proportional to delta naught to the minus 2. Therefore, we need small delta naughts for long relaxation times. Luckily, we have strongly coupled pairs, so one of the tunneling systems can have a small and one a large delta naught. And these are, within this model, precisely the tunneling states which make the long decay times, while the ones which have larger delta naughts lead to smaller decay times, shorter decay times.
Which is the point in the left curve that you're plotting in the right one? Is it possible to see?
Pardon?
How do you trace the right curve?
Oh. So here, in the left side, the left side is pretty easy because the sample was prepared in some equilibrium, and then you just switch on the bias field. And here, you prepare the sample, then you switch on the bias field, and then you sweep it.
So you sweep?
Yeah, but you sweep in within something like a minute or 2 minutes in order not to prepare a non-equilibrium state. Oh, somewhere here. Very short.
Actually, this curve looks non-explanatory. It's probably the sum of many explanations with the different
time scales. This curve is actually logarithmic in time. And this is a consequence of the support distribution of relaxation times, which is proposed by the tunneling model. Okay?
So you can actually invert that and get the distribution, right? So if you have the curve...
In principle, yes. So now let us come to the new experiments. In order to study the dynamics of the tunneling states, we temporarily applied the bias field. Therefore, we can change the duration of the bias field as well as the strength and the sweep rates, how fast the bias field is switched on and off, and have a lot of parameters we can vary to study the dynamics. Another advantage of applying the bias field only temporarily is that because the relevant tunneling systems are the one which have E about kT in the blue region where the bias field is applied, different tunneling systems contribute to the measurement than in the red region. But in our experiments, we measure the same tunneling states which contributed initially. So here the bias field is the applied bias field is a black line, and it corresponds to the right axis, and it's swept up to its maximum value within the sweep time Ts, and then we weight it for the weighting time, which we call Tw, and swept back down within the same sweep time Ts to zero bias field. And what we see is that we move out of the dipole gap, out of the zero field dipole gap, when we sweep the field up. And then we wait. While we wait, the new dipole gap begins to develop at this field value. And then when we sweep back down, we first move out of the newly developed dipole gap and back into the remaining of the zero field dipole gap. But clearly, we prepared the system in a non-equilibrium state because we don't move down to the initial value, where the bias field is already at zero. And because we are interested in this final decay, I define the zero point in time at the time when the bias field sweep is completed.
What is the reason for this profile in the protocol of having a ramp first and then having another ramp? I mean, why choosing that and, I don't know, not doing something faster, for example?
You mean switching the field on faster? Well, first we switched on the field faster, and then we found that we found a pronounced sweep time dependence, sweep rate dependence, and then we studied this behavior in terms of the sweep rate. So we will have a closer look at that. Okay, but So we are interested in this decay to learn about the dynamics which brings the tunneling state, the strongly coupled tunneling states, out of equilibrium by applying the bias field in the blue region. And we can trace this decay by a formula which partly is borrowed from the dipole gap theory from Alexander Burian, but then we adjusted it to our needs because the dipole gap actually describes the behavior in the blue region where the bias field is applied. And now we look at what happens later on. So the interesting part is the time-dependent part of this formula, which is a decay function, and we don't know that. And that gives us the shape of this decay curve. And that contains the dynamics we are interested in. This part here is a very solid prefactor which depends on temperature due to the temperature dependence of the dielectric constant itself. And it depends on the amount of the maximum applied bias field, which is F, because as stronger the maximum bias field is, as more strongly coupled pairs you can actually break. Because P times F must be greater than the interaction energy in order to break a strongly coupled pair. And then we have this prefactor contains a dipole moment P of the tunneling states, and P naught is the density of states. And U naught contains the interaction energy, while P naught U naught is a dimensionless interaction constant. And for temperatures above the minimum temperature of the dielectric constant, the temperature dependence is slightly different. So the obvious process to bring strongly coupled pairs of tunneling states out of equilibrium is, of course, by energy relaxation. So let's have a look at this. It can be done very fast. The tunneling states that contribute are the servo ones with E about kT. And now we apply a bias field with P times F is much greater than kT. Therefore, the energy splitting of the tunneling states, which initially had E about kT, is now about P times F. And the tunneling states begin to relax towards the ground state because P times F is much greater than kT. So clearly, the glass is out of thermal equilibrium, and we are back at zero bias field, and now relaxes back into thermal equilibrium. The longest relaxation time involved, let's call it the decay time tau naught. That time is given by the waiting time, which is the time the bias field was applied, times the relaxation time back at zero bias field with E about kT, over the relaxation time at E equals PF when the bias field is applied. And if the von Fonon process is a dominant relaxation process, this tau naught turns out to be much greater than the waiting time. The longest relaxation time involved is much greater than the relaxation time because P times F is much greater than KT. Within the tunneling model, the distribution of relaxation times yields a decay function which is logarithmic in time. Therefore, we plot our data on a logarithmic time axis, like done here. So the time axis is logarithmic, and the relative change of the dielectric axis, of the excess dielectric response, is on a linear axis. The sample I studied here is a polyester glass mylar, which is a 15 micrometer thin plastic film, and it's amorphous, of course. And so this measurement was done at 10 millikelvin. The sweep times of all the curves are the same, 1 second, so that's relatively fast. And the waiting times vary between 0.1 seconds and 5 hours. What we expect for energy relaxation are straight lines which are all parallel. So I fit the curve for 5 hours with a straight line. That is relatively good. And the first thing we find is it decays about within the same time as the waiting time was. For the one photon process, the decay time should be much longer. So clearly there's another relaxation mechanism involved, which is not a one photon process, and I can't think of anything else but interactions between tunneling states to come up with another relaxation process, and you'll find more hints later on, and maybe a proof that this is true. And starting from this curve here, we can now calculate the decay times, which the decay time is now the time when the model curve vanishes, more or less. We can calculate the decay times we expect for all the other waiting times, and we find good agreement with our data only for waiting times which are 10,000 seconds or longer. Already for waiting times of 3,000 seconds, the measured decay time is much longer than what we expect, and the curve is slightly non-logarithmic too, the measured curve. So this situation becomes worse at smaller waiting times. The waiting time dependence actually disappears at very small waiting times, and the curves become more and more non-logarithmic too. So clearly there's an additional pair-breaking mechanism involved, which is not just energy relaxation. But let's have a closer look at the experimental situation. So here I plotted two of the data curves from the last plot, again for 1 second and 300 seconds of waiting times plus another curve. And what you see here is the applied bias field over time. So for the red curve, it's just a spike on this time scale. And for the blue curve, the bias field was applied over 300 seconds. But then for the three curves, for the green curve, the sweep rate is much smaller than for the other curves. But the bias field is applied for a smaller time than for the blue curve. Nevertheless, the amplitude is greater for the green data points than for the blue curve. So clearly, the time the bias field was applied is not the important thing here, but for the green curve, the sweep rate is very important. We also see that the green curve is almost perfectly logarithmic in time. That's what we always observe for small sweep rates. Well, for fast sweep rates, we always observe strong deviations from logarithmic decays.
If we leave TW very long, then this thing should come down to the mean dipole
gap. Yes. Yes, that's exactly what happens. And if TW is very long, energy relaxation dominates everything else, by the way. That's why energy relaxation works for very long TW. But for these waiting times here, energy relaxation would make very small contribution. So here's another plot. In these two decay curves, the sweep rate is the same. The sweep rate is the maximum bias field F over the sweep time TS. And The maximum applied bias fields are very different by a factor of 10, and therefore the sweep times are different by a factor of 10. And what we find is astonishing, that decay times are exactly the same as in the accuracy of our experiment for these two curves. So the decay time is rather a function of the sweep rate than of the waiting time. For the parameters used here, these are very long, very small sweep rates, long sweep times, and the curves are exactly logarithmic in time. Now, if you normalize these two curves, that's a very neat way to find the dipole moment of the tunneling, the mean dipole moment of the tunneling states, because the relative change of the slopes is given by the dipole moment, and it is 1.2 dB plus minus 10%. That's also a typical dipole moment for all classes, I think, for most classes. So what kind of process can it be that causes a decay time which is a function of the sweep rate? And one process that gives this behavior is non-adiabatic driving of tunneling states. And let me explain you very hand-waving what I mean by that. Let's imagine a slightly asymmetric tunneling state in thermal equilibrium at zero biosphere. And because it's asymmetric, it's more or less localized in one of its wells. And now we sweep the biosphere, and the blue curve shows the energy splitting of the tunneling state, where the biosphere is being swept, independence of the biosphere. And for a certain biosphere, P times F just compensates the asymmetry energy. So the tunneling system is symmetric here. And in this case, it tunnels frequently and with the same amplitude between the left and the right well. Now, if we sweep very slowly, it tunnels very often between its two wells, while it's symmetric, and that's an adiabatic case, and if we start in the ground state, we will end up in the ground state. However, there is a critical tunneling splitting, delta not C, for which, for a certain sweep rate, tunneling systems with this critical tunneling splitting tunnel in average just once between the two states while the biosphere is being swept, while they are swept through the symmetric case. And this critical tunneling splitting is proportional to the square root of the sweep rate. That's basically the Landau-Sehner criterion. And if we sweep the biosphere faster than this critical tunneling splitting, these tunneling states don't tunnel at all in the symmetric, while they are symmetric, and they are forced to stay in the right well when we started in the right well. Clearly, we produce a non-equilibrium state then. However, since we sweep the biosphere up and we sweep it back down, we sweep back and we are back where we started, and therefore back in thermal equilibrium. So we didn't win anything. However, for those tunneling states which have a tunneling splitting of about delta not C, they have a certain probability to flip, to tunnel once during both sweeps. And then they're out of equilibrium. And the Landau-Sehner criterion gives a probability for these tunneling states to behave like this. And because we picked out a certain small distribution out of the poor distribution of tunneling states that contribute to this effect, the decay curve is expected to be non-logarithmic. It's actually more or less exponential, a little bit smeared out. And that's about how an exponential curve looks on a logarithmic time axis, the step function. And the decay times can be easily calculated from this behavior as being proportional to 1 over the sweep rate. So it's a function of the sweep rate. Now, in our case, that's what happens for very fast sweeps. And if we calculate, if we put in the numbers, we find that it makes sense for our sweep rates and the tunneling states. However, if we sweep slowly, we should be in the adiabatic regime. But we forgot one thing. We didn't switch off the AC field, the measuring field, which is at 10 kilohertz, and it's about a factor of 1,000 smaller than the DC field. But that's enough that the AC field drives the tunneling states non-adiabatically during every single cycle. Now, the DC field brings the tunneling states into the symmetric case, but the AC field drives the tunneling states non-adiabatically, and for a certain time, it drives them through the symmetric case. The AC field drives the tunneling states exactly the symmetric case during each cycle. And in that time, the situation is very complicated, actually, and there's no analytical solution so far. However, what we know is that the tunneling splitting is renormalized in that region, and the tunneling states tunnel much faster than anywhere else. And so I don't want to go into depth in this theoretical considerations, but what we find in our model is that all tunneling states that have a smaller tunneling splitting than delta not AC, the critical value, contribute to AC field driving, and they have a 50% probability to be out of thermal equilibrium after the sweep, and they, because it's a Bohr distribution, more or less make a logarithmic decay curve. And we find that tau naught should be a function of the sweep rate, but our model, it's not possible from this model to easily find whether it's a linear function. However, the data that we have strongly suggest that this function is linear. And I want to show you again this picture here. We always observe for small sweep rates, like for the green curve, logarithmic decays, as proposed by for non-adiabatic AC field driving, and for fast sweep rates, non-logarithmic decays in agreement with the model for DC field driving. Now I think I have to show you that this was all qualitatively. Now let's have a quantitative look at the data and compare to the model. So here is the bias field dependence of the axis dielectric response for 10 millikelvin and 20 millikelvin. And the black lines are the theory curves for non-adiabatic driving, and the difference of the slopes is given by the model. So that's in very good agreement. For there are only two fit parameters. I will show you later what they are. And but all the decay times where the model curves vanish are free fit parameters for every single curve. And here I plot the decay times over the sweep rates in a double logarithmic plot. And what we find is, first of all, for 20 millikelvin, the decay times are about two times longer than for 10 millikelvins. That's exactly the wrong wave of one phonon processes. We would expect that tunneling states relax slower for smaller temperatures. But here they relax faster for the smaller temperature. Well, that has to be due to interactions between tunneling states. And for small bias fields, we actually find a linear dependence of the decay time on the sweep rate, as we expect from our model. But for large bias fields, we see strong deviations. Okay, let us now go to...
So are you suggesting that the phonons help the system get out of equilibrium while you are doing the sweeps? Is that what you are saying?
Can you repeat?
Does this suggest that the phonons help the system get out of equilibrium while you are doing the slow sweep, and that's the reason why
no.
you get more out of equilibrium if you are at a higher temperature?
No. This is only... These curves are measure the decay while I'm back at zero bias field, and the systems are brought out of equilibrium by the bias field sweep before. So what we see here is how we go back to thermal equilibrium.
Right.
And this can be done either by a one phonon process or by interactions between tunneling states, maybe. And
I guess what I'm wondering is if something that comes with higher temperature is helping the system go further from equilibrium when you are driving the system out of equilibrium with your field.
Mm-hmm.
And then you need more time to relax because of that.
Well, this would be due to energy relaxation. This would be bringing the systems out of equilibrium due to energy relaxation. And for the data here, energy relaxation is just unimportant. So the data, the systems are brought out of equilibrium by sweeping the bias field. And that has nothing to do with phonons. Okay? And the reason why it can happen that systems relax faster for a warmer temperature is because It's mainly because we look at the thermal tunneling states, which have E equals KT. And that, of course, is larger for a higher temperature. So we look at different tunneling states. Okay. So now let's have a look at a strong bias field where the model doesn't seem to work and vary the sweep times instead of the bias field. And check what's going on there. And here, again, the slope of the curves is given by the model. It's just calculated from the parameters used on the plot before. And they are all the same. And the decay times are free fit parameters. This is the expectation from energy relaxation for these curves. And it's much smaller than what we see, so I just don't take it into account for my fits. And here are the decay times plotted over the sweep rate in a double logarithmic plot again, and what we see is a nice power law behavior over several decades in time, but it's not the linear behavior we expect, but tau naught is proportional to the sweep time to the power of 0.4. It's really not 0.5. So several orders of magnitude here, it's 0.4. So this seems to be strange. Let's plot all the decay times over the sweep rates for the data I just showed you, for 10 millikelvin and 20 millikelvin. The blue curves are the data for a large bias field but different sweep times. And the red curves are for different bias fields. And what we see is that for large enough bias fields, all decay times lie on one curve for both temperatures. And they obey the power law to the power of 0.4. For small bias fields, we observe the linear behavior as expected from our model. Now, the gray lines in the lower plot are the straight lines in the upper plot. They're identical to show you the temperature dependence. Here, the difference is about a factor of 2 in the linear regime. In the point to the power of 0.4 regime, the difference is actually very close to a factor of 2 to the power of 0.4. All that can be resolved if we allow an additional process to bring strongly coupled pairs of tunneling states out of equilibrium. And that's what I did here. So I allow an additional process that contributes to the excess dielectric response, and it decays within the decay time tau naught tilde, and has an amplitude alpha. And since we only took into account non-adiabatic driving to describe the data, because energy relaxation was unimportant for the parameters we used, I only take into account non-adiabatic driving as a second contribution, and because strongly coupled pairs can be broken only once, if I add this process, I have to make the amplitude for non-adiabatic driving by that amount smaller. So that's the answer. And then I can set this expression to 0 to find the decay time of my model curve. And that is done here. And for the double logarithmic plot, what we find is the sum of two straight lines. And so we can get any slope, basically, by summing them up the right way. And to get the straight lines shown here, the fit parameters are for the amplitude 0.6 if the field is large, but 0 for small fields, so something changes suddenly. And the decay time, tau naught tilde of the novel process. Oh, I have to say the decay time for non-adiabatic AC field driving, of course, I assume it to be proportional to 1 over the sweep rate, as expected in our model for non-adiabatic driving. And I assume the right temperature dependence from our model. And then I find that tau naught tilde is 4,700 seconds. And this value is independent on temperature. And it also turns out to be independent on temperature between 10 millikelvin and 650 millikelvin, that's the range we measured, and independent on the biosphere history, so to speak, how long the biosphere was applied, and independent on the sweep rate. The only thing is that this novel process disappears for small biospheres. And I'm sure that it's not an artifact because I measured a different sample and it has a different tau naught tilde in a different sample. Pardon?
Of the same order?
Yes, yeah, same order of magnitude by about a factor of two different or something like that. So what can this extra pair breaking process be? Since tau naught tilde is constant, especially temperature independent, the process must involve quantum mechanical tunneling. It cannot rely on thermal phonons. And here's again a hand waving argument, which direction I think we have to go here. Imagine that the tunneling state contains something like 10, 20, 100 atoms. Therefore, it's not just a simple two-level system in reality, but the term scheme is quite complicated. And such a system behaves like a tunneling state if you plot in configurational space, if two of the wells that are lowest in energy are close by and close enough in energy that the system can tunnel in between these two wells. Now, if we apply a bias field, we change all the values of the system relative to each other according to the dipole moment distribution in these wells, mainly the direction of the dipole moment in space is distributed. And we might end up during the sweep at some time in a situation where we can tunnel to the neighbor well of this double well potential. And from there, we might be able to tunnel into the next neighbor well, which is lower in energy in this case. And at some time, we will end up in a metastable state, which means during the whole sweep, none of the neighbor wells of this well is ever lower in energy. So the system is trapped here. And when we go back to zero biosphere, the system is still trapped in this state. But now it takes a long time to tunnel back to the original double well because we have the difference in energy are much greater than KT between the wells here. And therefore, we have to tunnel in this case through like the double barrier, which makes an exponentially longer time. The number of while this tunneling state is now not present for our measurement, it doesn't contribute. It behaves like a single well. Another state contributes because a single well at the start might a metastable state might as well be a double well potential because of the pro distribution of parameters. The number of contributing tunneling states is always the same. And I call this feed-induced structural rearrangement. Now, in a conference last week, actually, in Dresden, Germany, I gave this a similar talk, and then somebody suggested that it might also be possible that many tunneling states cluster together instead of strongly coupled pairs, and we have cluster of many tunneling states, and then the structural rearrangement would involve clusters of many tunneling states, and it would probably work even better if you try to make a model for this. I didn't try that, I just think this is a possible way to go. And the main argument is that we have this constant delta tau naught tilde, which has to involve quantum mechanical tunneling. And I think high temperature glass people who work at the glass transition temperature have relatively similar arguments for the long time aging at the glass transition temperature. Probably somebody here is a specialist for that. Anyway, I want to show you that it works. So let's go to the temperature dependence between 10 millikelvin and 650 millikelvin. Here we have to take into account that the dielectric constant has a minimum at this frequency of 10 kilohertz at 50 millikelvin. So the temperature dependence is different for the blue curves and for the red curves. But that can be easily done and is taken into account. And black curves are again the model curves, including non-adiabatic driving and the novel process. And I have to say, it's not possible to fit this data without the novel process. You really need it. And the fit parameters, besides the Tauner tilde for the novel process and the alpha of 0.6 for the novel process, are now these two here. The dipole moment is 1.2 dBi, and the dimensionless interaction constant, P0, U0, is 6.3 times 10 to minus 4. And this is a value which was also observed and theoretically predicted in this order of magnitude for classes in general by other experiments. While this thing here, which goes into the prefactor of the whole expression, is well known from the temperature dependence of the dielectric constant at low temperatures. This is just measured. And we have only these two fit parameters for all the model curves that I showed you so far and that I will show you from now on for the slopes of the model curves. Again, the decay times are fit parameters, free fit parameters are plotted here over temperature. And the one phonon process predicts a linear dependence, as shown by the black line. And we see that for high enough temperatures, but below 55 millikelvin, we clearly see deviations, and the decay happens faster than predicted by the one phonon process. I think at this point, we can say with certainty that interaction between tunneling states matters and enhances the relaxation between tunneling states. Of tunneling states back in the thermal equilibrium. And Alexander Burin actually published an idea how this can be done in before we did these measurements in 98. And so his idea is that you have weakly coupled pairs of tunneling states that interact, that resonantly interact, exchange phonons and photons, and this process is very ineffective because it's very hard to find tunneling states which have the same energy and are close enough to do this. However, if you add, for example, spectral diffusion, which introduces a fluctuation of the energy states of all tunneling states by weak interaction with a neighbor tunneling states, it means that the parameter room becomes much greater for this process, and it becomes more important. And also, only this year he came up with another idea that the driving AC field actually introduces a fluctuation of the energy levels too, and therefore the parameter range for this kind of interaction becomes even greater and depends on the applied AC field. And now that's the relaxation rate for one phonon processes, and that's for this interaction mediated relaxation. But in our case, E is kT. And if you plug it in, you find that for one phonon relaxation, the rate is proportional to T, and for this interaction mediated relaxation, it's proportional to 1 over T. And that's what we see here. Of course, the temperature of 55 millikelvin is a material constant, and it might be different for other classes, maybe quartz class, but I strongly believe that it's in the same order of magnitude for even for the more common classes like quartz class. Okay, now let us go on with the fits. These are the scaling data that I showed you. And because the applied field is small for the red data, The novel process doesn't contribute here, but it does contribute for the blue data, and that's a contribution. And then the fits for non-adiabatic driving and the novel process with the, it's not fits, it's theory curves using the two fit parameters that I showed you on the last slide now. They fit perfectly. And if we look at the waiting time dependent data I showed you before, we used to be able to fit only the two highest curves. But if you include the novel process to energy relaxation, but don't take into account in this case non-adiabatic driving, it's a very long waiting times, it shouldn't matter, then we can fit down to 1,000 seconds. But then clearly non-adiabatic driving takes over. And it's hard to make come up with model curves for DC driving because they have to be calculated numerically. Okay, well, maybe it's time for the conclusion. I have some data on BK7, which is another class, but it would take another 10 minutes to discuss them. So if somebody is interested, come to me. So the conclusion is, we already knew before we started our new experiment that interaction between tunneling states matters. And the dipole gap theory already made clear that strongly coupled pairs govern non-equilibrium dynamics. And I have to say that the same guy who made the dipole gap theory and came up with this idea, last week he came up with another idea and said it's not the strongly coupled pairs, but it's clusters of coherently tunneling states, which means that as bigger the cluster is, as longer the relaxation time of that cluster, because more tunneling states are involved. And he claims he can describe all the data with a cluster idea as well as with a strongly coupled pair idea. I think we can adjust our model completely to his new idea if you want. I don't see at this point why I should do it. Anyway, the reason that he came up with a new idea was that there's a phase transition observed at very low temperatures in some classes. The dielectric constant has a kind of a kink, and below the temperature, the magnetic field dependence is very strong on non-magnetic classes, but that's a different story. Anyway, people believe that it might be that tunneling states move coherently below this phase transition. And if he starts with clusters, he can let the clusters grow to lower temperatures and then have this continuous phase transition. Okay, but our new experiments were concerned about the dynamics of the strongly coupled pairs. And what we found is that field-enhanced pair breaking processes are more than just energy relaxation. And we believe that non-adiabatic driving is important. And I think our data show that this is possible. And then we find that there must be another process, a third process, which has a constant decay time, constant relaxation times. And therefore, it must be due to quantum mechanical tunneling. And my model, I came up with a model to describes this as structural rearrangement of tunneling states. And we also find that for Mylar below 55 millikelvin, relaxation processes are strongly enhanced by interaction between tunneling states. And I should not stop before thanking a number of people. So of course I have to thank Doug Osherov to invite me to work in his group. And he gave me all freedom to do whatever I want, which is always good. And Peter Nalbach is actually very involved in the theoretical model for non-adiabatic driving. So he was our house theorist, and he had the idea that non-adiabatic driving might be important and calculated the model for us. And I of course have to thank these two for many discussions, and Dana Rosenberg was a graduate student who more or less was stopped when I started at Stanford, and it was very convenient for me to use the cell that she built for my samples. And I have to thank the Deutsche Forschungsgemeinschaft for giving me a stipend, and the US Department of Energy for sponsoring our research.
Thank you very much. We have time for comments or questions.
Go ahead. Have you tried applying pressure, in this case actually stretching the myelin, to see if that has an effect on the delta zero?
It hasn't been done with Mylar, I believe, but the original dipole gap data where they swept the field and found here. These data were also done with elastic fields on several classes. I don't think on Mylar. I think they did it on quartz class.
Because the effect of the field is basically changing the spin, right?
Change, yes. Right. And the same happens for an elastic field.
Right.
So the experiments are much, much more difficult for elastic fields. So.
Because what I was thinking, is it possible to change both the splitting and the equivalent of the transverse field, which gives you the quantum mechanical tunneling. So you have two nodes, basically one couples here sigma z, right, in your two-level system, which is the splitting,
mm-hmm.
and the equivalent of the transverse in the sigma x transverse field, which it gives you the tunneling. So it's like, I was thinking maybe pressure or something like this can change the width of your
bearings. I think,
I'm trying to see what's the effect of that on the.
I mean, the do you? I'm not sure whether I understand your question, but I have the feeling you think in terms of NMR experiments, more or less, where you have a strong magnetic field.
Yeah,
to
this field is just in the language. When I think one of the first transparencies you wrote in the two-level system, you have two parameters, right?
You have yes, you have delta naught. Oh.
Energy splitting.
Mm-hmm.
And you have the matrix element.
And you want to change the tunneling splitting as well.
Right.
I don't think. I mean, the tunneling splitting is given by the potential in between the two wells,
the and the distance.
It's so and the distance, yes.
So slightly changing the distance, since the matrix element is exponential, mm-hmm. dependent on the distance. So even though pressure changes,
it might be possible to do that. Mm-hmm. It certainly has never been done, and I think the reason for it is you have a broad distribution of tunneling splitting. So if you do an experiment like this, you just shift in your distribution.
No, but you're shifting in one direction, preferentially. Say if you always bias them to decrease the width of the barriers.
All of them.
Or either increase depending if you apply pressure or tense the system. One of the things that could happen is that you would change your scale. If you speed up your tunneling rates, perhaps these curves would shift one way or the other. They would either relax all of them mm-hmm. faster or all of them slower.
Mm-hmm. You should have to influence the distribution. Maybe that will do something to the distribution.
No, yeah, but the distribution, if you always stretch in the distribution, like, say, if you have
so you want to
always decrease the width of the barriers, you're moving the whole distribution to one side.
If you, it has not been done, but I think it's interesting because I'm not sure exactly how to do it experimentally, but that's so easy, but of course you have at least many people believe that we have a minimum delta naught tunneling splitting, mm-hmm. and that would of course shift if you do something like that. Mm-hmm. And if you can design an experiment to observe delta naught min, which might be for example the if you cool down a sample measured dielectric constant, the tunneling model says that the dielectric constant is logarithmically in temperature, but it levels off at some low temperature. Mm-hmm. due to a E-min, energy splitting min. And if this is a data nut min, you certainly should see this leveling off, shifting in temperature. But I'm not sure whether it's so easy to perform this experiment.
Something more a bit related. It's not exactly the same, but I know of somebody in France who tried to see the dependence of all these measurements on the size of the sample. So he was still cutting the sample smaller and smaller and smaller, expecting that he was getting rid of sample level 6 tenths of the layers in the distribution or something, and see how these things change.
Yeah, but for the French guy, what's his name, Latieu?
Yeah.
I have to say that I think he doesn't take one thing into account in his interpretation, and that is that he compares the phonon wavelengths with the thickness of the sample. Mm-hmm. But you have to take into account that on the surface of the sample, the phonon wavelength is different. So it's smaller. So more phonons fit in the sample than in his calculations. I think he has to do that if he wants to do it right.
Any other comments, questions? If not, let's thank our speaker one more time.